I've often said it over the years that my one biggest regret was that I did not bring Shane over from the hospital and have him in the courthouse in so the judge could look and see the devastation that was caused to our family, to Shane and to our family.
Hi everyone and welcome to The Gab, a fortnightly podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. This is episode 2 and I'm Ronan Lardner. Whether it's day or night or wherever you are throughout the world, thank you for taking the time to click and to download. On August the 5th, 2012, maybe a day that doesn't stand out in your mind, but it definitely does in the minds of the Grogan family, a day they will never forget. A phone call to tell them that their son Shane was attacked. It transpired that he suffered a life-changing brain injury. He now requires 24-hour care 7 days a week. I sat with his mum, his dad, and his sister for a chat. I'm here right now in the beautiful sitting room with Shane Grogan's mom and dad and his sister Sarah as well. Joe, Joan and Sarah, thanks very much indeed for having me here in your home.
You're welcome, Robert.
Thanks a lot. And before we get off, I just want to say on a happy note, a recent engagement has brought an awful lot of happiness to the Grogan household. So Sarah, I just want to wish yourself and Mike and the two cool dudes at home the very, very best in your future, okay?
Thanks a million, Robert.
Not at all. Great excitement. And I can see smiles here on Mom and Dad's face as well. So there you go. So they're looking forward. Dad's looking forward to the bill.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Joe, if I can just get, I suppose, a little serious for a second. I'll just bring you back, first of all, to 2013, when the victim impact statement was read out by you on behalf, of course, of Shane. And the end piece said, a lot of the time you feel helpless, all the time you're heartbroken. Very, very strong words. Do you remember saying it at the time?
Yeah. Again, that whole statement, it took a bit of doing to write about Shane's past, his present and the future. And those words still resonate today, you know. You know, we are helpless and there's a lot of times you cannot do things for Shane and we are heartbroken because, as you said about Sarah's engagement and the kids, the grandkids, he's not here to enjoy it with them. You know, it's very hard to describe, you know,
of course,
describe a feeling, but you know, but back in the day in the courthouse, you know, standing there and I'm looking down at the guy that did this and looking at the judge, and you know, and I don't know, I felt helpless in the sense that what these words going to help Shane in any way.
Yeah.
And I've often said it over the years that my one biggest regret was that I did not bring Shane over from the hospital and have him in the courthouse in so the judge could look and see the devastation that was caused to our family, to Shane and to our family. You know, in any way that if he was on a stretcher or in a wheelchair or some, you know, that a judge could see it,
yeah,
and feel what we're feeling rather than just reading a statement to him.
Well, that's a statement, obviously, that came from what happened previously. Let's just have a little chat, first of all, about the Grogan family pre the 5th of August 2012, when the incident happened. Tell us a little bit about the family, first of all. Joan, you're the lady of the house. What was it like with two right troublemakers, as Sarah looks across here? What was it like in the house? Typical family of four?
Typical family of four. Well, I suppose we're all working, all doing something. Sarah was in England. She was in college in Walsall, and Shane was in medical working, and there was always something to be done, even though the needs of them were living here. They were still coming and going. Sarah came home every couple of weeks. Shane came in every evening for his dinner, and he might go off on his bike and then come back and have something to eat. And typical
household, running in and running out the door, and
that's it.
The odd kiss on the cheek, and I love you, Mom, and I love you, Dad, kind of an idea. And Shane had aspirations as well for accountancy. That was in his head. That was happening. He was doing the night course, correct?
Yeah, he was just about to start. He'd done a business degree in Castlebar. And he started working in Merritt as just a general operative on the floor, but he got a promotion, came up in the accounts department, and he got it, and he was very happy there. He was I think it's a 13 or 14 women in the office with them, and he was the boy, and they were all minding him like Mammy was, and
bear in mind an extremely handsome man as well, so there you go,
takes after his father, of course. But he had plans. He had big plans to go back to the uni in Galway, and Merritt were going to finance, you know, help him out to get his an accountancy degree. And he was also going to change his car, but he wouldn't get a loan for it. He said, "I'll save up." Now, he was driving an old Golf at the time, and it was breaking down more times, but he said, "No, I'll stick it out now, and I'll put a few more bob aside every week," so he wouldn't have a loan. He wanted to, you know, he was very astute that way, as deft and all as he was, no more than yourself. He had a very steady head on him, you know, and I his future was so good. Like, I mean, he was only 22. He was just short of his 23rd birthday at the time. And, you know, that was Shane. He was just, I mean, all his friends, everyone, he was 6'4", and he stood shoulders, head and shoulders above a lot of his friends. But he was just a big child. You know, they used to have great crack messing. They loved music. They loved going to music. They went to Oxygen when he was like 16, and he went over to, what was the name of the other one?
Tomorrowland.
And there's a fabulous photograph of him with Avicii. It's on the front of our Care for Shane page.
That's right. He's up on
someone's shoulders, up on Joe Hood's shoulders at the time. I mean, it was so freakish that was there. Someone saw the video and said, "Was that Shane?" And we took a still out of it. But that was Shane. And, you know, it's again, going back to it, it's heartbreaking that he's not able to do it. Yeah. He's there, but he's not, you know, not with us in that sense, you know.
Yeah, he was a very outgoing chap, great fun, embraced life. What was the next adventure around the corner? He was one of those people, wasn't he?
He never stopped. And no more than his partner in crime, Sarah. Like, you know, the two of them had gone off and something would happen, we'd never hear about it. And then, you know, they covered up for one another. But, like, that was, no, that's the normal family, you know, that's the way it was. And then we were so, I suppose, at that particular time, is it just prior to that incident, we were so happy. I mean, there was nothing, you couldn't see anything on the horizon that was going to go, you know, what'll happen now that would change all this. And it did, in an instant. It just, you know, I mean, the day will never leave my memory. Like, you know, the whole day, sitting here in this chair, watching the Galway races, getting texts from Shane, winner, 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 and I'm going, "Oh, stop," like, you know. No, he wasn't a gambler. He'd like have his fiver or fiver each way on a horse, like, but he was just happy out, you know. It's terrible. It's terrible to not have him, you know, sitting here and having the crack with us.
Of course. Then I hate bringing you back, because I know every time I bring it back, it hurts as much as it hurt on the night that you got the phone call. That dreaded phone call, that phone call that no parent wants to get, it came at one time.
It came around quarter to three, in the morning. My phone rang, which again, you know, and looked at it was Shane, and I just automatically assumed that he lost his key, he locked out of the house or the apartment or something like that, and, you know, ready to give him the, you know,
the fatherly speech.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it wasn't him that was spoken. It was his girlfriend that was screaming out on the phone, and just, you know, kind of, "What's going on? Whoa, what's happening?" And then she was explaining kind of best where the war, where she was at, what happened. And it happened so quickly that we were dressed and in the car and going, it's only 5 minutes down the road.
The Fair Green.
And we were down there, and the ambulance was there, and the guards were there, and it happens so fast. It's like a blur at times, but it still sticks there, and like we're in the hospital, and of course, at that dreaded moment, you're brought into a room, and you know, you don't know what's going to be said to us, and they said, "Look, we're sending them to Beaumont," and we're going, you know, why? What's, you know, why isn't he with the, you know,
yeah, you didn't realise the extremities.
We'd have an idea, but you know, but Beaumont, you know, and someone says Beaumont, you're going, this is, you know, and I think she said at the time, like, you know, well, this is good, because you know, if things weren't going to go his way, that would be it. And it's all struck us all, you know, wow, how can this be
happening? What do you mean?
Why is this? You know, what's happening? Why isn't he in that ward, or why didn't you, you know? And so we came home and we just got grabbed a few things in the bag and we went off that morning. Shane went off in the ambulance, and when we were on our way into Dublin, we got a phone call from the surgeon to say that he needs to operate on Shane. And we called, okay, he needed our consent over the phone, literally in the car, you know, do what you have to do. And by the time we got up there, then we met Joan's friend, Margaret Rose, and you know, again, we're in another little room with a surgeon, and he's telling us, and just Margaret Rose was writing down the thing, you know, we were telling her, because you wouldn't remember it. You're looking at a guy, what do you mean? Well, you know, he's explaining in the medical terms what's happening.
What's happened with my son.
Yeah,
what's happening here?
And like his phrase, I think, was, look, Shane could wake up with a bad headache. Or it could be the other extreme. And in Shane's case, unfortunately, it was the other extreme. And, you know, we had a tough...
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, those weeks in Beaumont and waiting for him to come out of an induced coma, and, you know, you see little glimmers and you go, God, this is it now. Because people have got better, you know, and then it just didn't happen.
So let's go back a little bit again to exactly what happened to Shane. Because the phone call that you got, obviously there was a brick involved that was literally forced at Shane's, would you call it temple, or was it known exactly where he was hit?
Hit at the back
of his head.
Yeah,
back of his head, okay.
Back right-hand side. What exactly happened is not very clear. Shane was taken, they were taking a shortcut through the Fair Green there, in the old tennis court there, and there was a few lads there, whatever, and they started at Shane's girlfriend at the time, and row started, and whatever happened, Shane got hit with a brick.
Yeah.
You know, and he was unconscious, you know. I mean, it was... the guy pleaded guilty in court, so there was never a real... No one really knows exactly what happened, if you know what I mean.
Of course.
We parked it because... sometimes you don't really want to know a lot of stuff, but you just feel that, you know, you just need to get on from what happened and move on from the court case and just to mind Shane rather than get bogged down in. I'm angry all the time about it, but you know, you have to bury all that and say, look, move on with life, look after everyone else that's here and look after Shane, and to that extent, you know, that's all we can do.
Now, Sarah, you were over in the UK at the time.
Yeah.
Which was difficult in itself because obviously you weren't connected to the family unit at home at that time. How did you hear what happened?
I got a phone call from Mam that morning, early enough, I'd say. It was about 8:30 on the Sunday morning. And obviously getting a phone call from Mam at 8:30 on a Sunday morning, I knew there was something wrong. But unfortunately, around that period of time, Nana was actually sick at the time. So I thought that something had happened to her. But my mum rang me and asked, was my housemate who was living with me at the time, Lindsay, there, and that she needed to talk to me and explain that Shane got hurt and that I needed to come home, that they had asked if Shane had any siblings and that to get me home. So the conversation was quite short with Mam, more or less that Shane was hurt, I needed to come home. She'll talk to me then, that my Aunt Frances was going to ring me, that she had organised my flights. So came off the phone and I suppose like that, didn't know what was going on. And then Frances rang me that my flight was at whatever time and I needed to get to the airport for whatever time. And she said, and when you arrive in Dublin, and I said, sure, is there no other flight into Knock? How am I going to get to Galway Hospital from Dublin? And she said, Sarah, Shane's in Beaumont. I didn't know that.
Okay.
I know that you probably didn't know to tell me or whatever. But I suppose that's when I knew then it was serious, because you think of Beaumont, you know, it's...
And you know it's the head, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I suppose... All a blur then, threw stuff into a suitcase and said, I suppose, get to Shane. And Shane had operation at that time and got to Beaumont, and my aunt was there, Paula, my Uncle Sean, Nana, Grandad, they were all there, but they were waiting for me to get there to get in to see Shane after the surgery.
And like that, I kind of thought going over on the plane, oh, he's going to wake up and he's going to, you know, be groggy and tell me he's grand or whatever. And I haven't heard his voice since, unfortunately. Do you know?
No, you were very close.
Oh, yeah.
Extremely close.
Yeah.
As another smile comes to your face. What devilment did you get up to together?
Well, like Dad already said, we were very close, but you often didn't hear about the things that we'd get up to.
Age-wise, between you, what are we talking?
14 months.
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah.
So Shane was 22.
You were a busy mom.
Yeah.
Very busy time, yeah.
So Shane was 22 at the time and I was 21. I had just turned 21
in November.
Hmm. So I was very close growing up and all our friends were very close, network of friends. And
yeah, mutual, all mutuals, yeah.
And all my friends fancied Shane, so that was always fun.
Well, like we're not surprised,
yeah.
Because he is an extremely handsome man. So obviously this really affected you initially and still obviously does, which we'll get into a little bit later on. Joan, Joe told us about the phone call. Everything happened extremely quickly. What was going on in your head?
We were just in shock, like it didn't really hit us, like we were just on overdrive, like I just said, look, he's going to be all right and we're going to reassure him that he's okay. And down there when we got there and waiting for the ambulance and that, just said, Shane, Mammy's with you and you're going to be all right, Mammy's minding you. And that's the thing, there was no reaction out of him. And Shane looked immaculate. Shane went to the races that day with a grey trouser pants and a beautiful brand new shirt that he bought across the road that morning and a pink tie, and he still looked the exact same. He just looked like he was asleep.
Right.
So there was no sign of any trauma or nothing. To me, he looked the same, and I thought, he can hear me, and I'm just going to keep him reassured, hold his hand. But you didn't know to touch him because you didn't know, are you doing the wrong thing?
Yeah. So obviously we know from reading bits and pieces, obviously, from the Care for Shane page and from reading things in the papers and yourselves as well, who have been so open about all of this and so brilliant about this whole situation. There was an awful lot of to and fro then with hospitals. It was Dublin, it was Galway, there was the UK, then there was all of these. So I know it, at this stage now it's still a blur with all that was happening there. So was there a glimmers, as Joe said, was there a glimmers of hope along the line that you kind of went, well, wait a second, there's a reaction there. You know, when did you notice that things might have been lifting and then all of a sudden you got the knock back again?
Well, we just always thought when there's life, there's hope. Like we always felt that we'll bring them to the next thing. We'll do our best for them, whatever we can do. Mm. And whatever was suggested to us, we did it. But with the brain, it's unknown as to, it has to, we're always like, oh, he needs time to recover and it's rest is good and it regenerates itself. And like, it's not like another organ that it'll fix, you know, it's time.
Yeah. And time obviously has moved on. And this year will be the 10th anniversary, which is another sore time.
Yeah.
All these milestones, if we call them that, on August the 5th of this year. Where is Shane now and what is the situation since 2012 to now? What has been the progression?
Like I say, he's been in various hospitals and rehabs. I suppose you say 10 years, but you know, you take the last two out of it, Rowan, and the last 2 years have been the most difficult, obviously. Mm. With COVID, there was lockdown in the nursing home. We weren't allowed to visit. And that hurt us more, I think, than anything else, you know, that you couldn't go in there. Because we were used to going in every day. Joan would be there morning, noon and night. Or we'd swap it around.
Yeah.
There was always someone with Shane. And then to be told you couldn't go in and you couldn't be with them. And, you'd be worried about it. And then, like, last year when he got COVID, it was this time last year for the world. And he was in hospital with it for 10 days and on oxygen. And I remember going up with John and I said, it brought it all back again.
Of course it did.
It's like going back to Beaumont. And at the time, John was stayed with Shane at the time. I couldn't get in. You know, you're at a loss. And this... I won't harp on about COVID too much, but it just robbed us of so much.
Of course it did.
You know, and thankfully we've had his physiotherapist with them. He stuck with them, Jonathan, as much as he could. And we've new girl Cathy is there with them now. And it's only this week, really, that he's getting back to the real physical stuff that he used to do before COVID. And he looks, you know, he is a very strong, he looks great, you know. The thing, you know, he's, again, it goes back. I remember in Beaumont, I remember him moving his finger, you know, when they were coming off, he was in an induced coma, but he moved his finger and I thought, this is it, you know.
Well, yeah, this is the start.
This is it. I mean, and that finger still moves, but I just, you know, I also, and another incident over in Leamington where I was over there and it was 8 o'clock at night, very quiet, and I was sitting beside Shane at one side and the door opened and a little nurse walked in, she's coming on duty, and lovely girl, she kind of, "Hi Shane, I'm on tonight." And Shane lifted his head and turned right over to her. And I was, wow, that is amazing. And I think over the years that we found that Shane reacts to some people more than he does to others, you know, and it's amazing to see that. So you have to always think there's some hope, there is something there, and like I said, they're doing so much advances with medicine now, and particularly with, you know, even with the brain, that, you know, you're always hopeful that someday someone will come with the eureka moment.
And do you notice that he does respond more so now than he did, obviously, maybe a couple of years ago? Is there a movement in the right direction?
Mm. He does. He watches. He doesn't like respond like that. He physically says or does anything, but he'd engage with you. He watches you, and you're going around the room. I find him tidying up the room and doing something. He kind of goes, like, watch yet now, like, as
so you feel he understands you.
Oh, he does. He definitely understands what's going on.
Yeah,
he does. Like Shane and Sarah used to always say, "She'll never stop," was what they used to call me. "She'll never stop." And I just say to him, "She'll never stop." It's back again. And he would just watch. His head will follow whatever you're doing.
Yeah,
that's the way he'll engage with you.
I think we all got a lovely feeling in our hearts. I don't know how long ago it was now, because as you said, COVID has us all in a different place, right? Mm. But when I seen him in the water and the smile on his face and obviously his physios beside him and the guys from the swimming pool or whatever, that was such a fabulous moment.
Yeah.
I think everybody in the town, everybody that's seen it on social media just went, oh, wow. What was it like for you to see him in the swimming pool?
Lisa in the pool was onto us for a long time, you know, bring him down and going, you know, crikey, there's a lot involved in getting Shane into a pool. It's not just going down and, you know. So when we did get him in, and of course, I was outside looking in because you were only allowed so many people in the swimming pool at the time. And, you know, I was amazed at it. I was looking in, you know, the big window, looking across, and you see Jonathan and Shane, and I think Breen was with them at the time.
And Shawnee.
You know, there was some, you know. And, you know, I said, that was Shane. I mean, that's where he started his career. He started before that swimming pool, he was cleaning the swimming pool. That's what he worked at. And then he became a lifeguard. And then Shane always worked. He was always at it, you know. And I was like that. It was just one of those moments when I was allowed to brought me in then, you know, and he had his two elbows up on the side of the pool. And it got, crikey, you know, this is so natural.
Yeah,
no.
It was nearly like he was home or a part of home.
Yeah. Which was lovely. It was a lovely thing to see and witness. Yeah. And hopefully, again, we'll get back there again.
Yeah, you will.
Someday.
You will.
It just, because we just knocked back, you know, for 2 years of nothing, you know, and you have to start again from scratch to get him up, to build up to that stage again. You know, it's not all doom and gloom. We're always hopeful and we're always looking for people to come forward and say, look, I can do this or I can do that. And always, there's always someone. I think we've never struck for it. Like, we have music therapists now, another new music therapist helping with them, and Fabian. And, you know, again, because of COVID, we cannot be in the room with them to see what he's doing.
Of course.
But now that'll change, hopefully, in the next few weeks. And we'll be able to look and just to see what's happening with them and how Shane reacts to different music and different sounds. And, you know, there's a whole therapy built around it.
I do remember that he loved a bit of music or whatever, and he likes a team called Liverpool as well, along the line, so we'll
that's inflicted on him.
No, it's all right. Same as. So we're from the same club. We're fine. We're grand. But yeah, so obviously he's down in Green Park nursing home now. They're a great bunch down there. Fantastic bunch down there. I heard Sarah a second ago saying, you know, Shawnee, you have built up friends, I feel, through Shane, as in people that obviously physios and people that are working in Green Park and all these. I think that you've built up another community of friends and associates through Shane, really, haven't you, as well?
We've got to know a lot of people, yeah.
Through. Yeah.
Well, a lot of people have come to us for advice.
Yeah.
Shane is very well known in Ireland, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
You know, no matter where you go, it wasn't just to make a connection. Oh, someone said, oh, you're Shane's brother, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and but people over the years would have contacted us where someone, a family member would have a brain injury or something would happen,
yeah,
a car crash or an accident or whatever, and they're going, what do we do?
Mm.
Because, unfortunately, the health system is not geared for it. You're just,
yeah,
either you get your 3 months in Dunleary rehab and it's kind of go to a nursing home and that's it. You'll be okay there then.
Mm.
There's no real push for, you know, for new treatments and that. But we did start an organisation a few years ago called On Sale. It's through based in Dublin, and they've set up a fabulous new rehab in Dublin just 2 years ago now. And Shane was to be one of the first to go up there, but thank you, COVID.
Yeah.
Didn't get there, but we will get there. Now, this is really, it's a German model, and they have got the fantastic equipment. There's a robot suit, so basically you'll be put in a suit and it would walk for you. It'll do a bit of walking and you kind of take over then. It's very well run. It's only small, you know, it's not once a state-of-the-art building. It's in, you know, it's just a revamped warehouse that they've got there. And they do, it's all about work. It's all about having good physiotherapists and you know, and a few, there's only a few people goes in at a time, obviously.
Yeah.
But we're really looking at that, to me, I'm looking forward to.
Of course,
know.
Yeah.
We've seen a lot of people over the years with a girl coming down from Ulster University with new technology. I'm looking at your machine there. She had this, like a scrum cap she put on, Shane.
Yeah.
Connected to a laptop, and she would, by noise, she would lose like a white noise through, and she would ask Shane different questions. Now, she was there for what, a week,
mm-hmm,
or 10 days? She'd be there at the same time every day, ask the same questions and check in responses. And it's, you know, and she showed me how it worked, as in, she'd ask that, you know, if there'd be noise going in and she'd turn it off one side and a little ball would hop down in the middle of a screen and it'd flick back and over. So the outcome with that, what they're hoping to do was develop an app. So basically, you could get yes and no from Shane. And
okay,
yes and no are the two, you know, if we could find any way of getting those two answers from Shane, then you have a key to the, to his, you know. Yeah. And basically, what they were saying is like, the brain waves are there, they're working. But if they could adapt something like that, and you would have an app on your phone, you'd ask Shane a question, and he could answer yes or no. So you'd ask him, are you tired? Do you want music? Is your nose itchy? Are you itchy? You know,
yeah,
the simple, yeah, things in life that we take for granted that Shane cannot communicate with us, they're hoping to develop that. Now, it's like the mobile phone. It takes time.
Of course it does, yeah.
You know, you'd be very hopeful that something like that, or there's some, you know, someone listening to this, some IT guy out there that,
yeah,
has an idea, you know what I mean? And they're always there. And like I said, people have been on to us from, you know, Limerick University, they've been on from a different part, just because of Shane, and just because,
yeah,
I see a photograph of Shane that was taken a few weeks before the incident. It was in Turkey, was it?
Yeah.
He's sitting there with his beer and a t-shirt, and he looked, you know, and people recognise him, so, you know, it's a very recognisable photograph of him.
It is, but I think, no more than a lot of things, what happened at the time really struck the nation. I think everybody, again, found it so tragic and so difficult to, you know, to take in. It was just one of those things that I think it just affected everybody. Do you know what I mean? It really did.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Well, he was a young guy.
I know, but it happens so often.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember we were in Dublin. We were 5-6 weeks in Dublin. I had to come down, and I had work to do, and I came down one night, and I went up to the cathedral, and the place was covered in candles, and there was people there. I go, what's this like?
Mm.
And this is all for Shane. And it was, I don't know myself. I cannot understand how he captured people's imaginations, or, you know, how this incident, I know, like, we're a private family. We're probably well known, but we're still, you know, you look around here, this is us, like.
Yeah.
But I found it very moving that, you know, and every time you go up the street, people will always ask you. And I don't mind, you know, and my friends won't talk about it because they know, like, well, if there's nothing good to say or if I need, and I love this setting because I can unload onto you and your listeners that, you know, that it, this is part of, you know, what we are. But yeah, it always gets me that how popular Shane and our cause is.
Yeah. But the people have been fantastic. We're going to talk about that in a few moments with the whole Care for Shane. Now, Joan, the grandkids mean an awful lot to you, and I know they do because I get regular texts in about the two, and it could be a birthday or all these little milestones. Tell me what those two little men mean to you.
They're just like a new purpose in my life, really, like that you see what's the plan for today now. I look after Ollie 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, but some other days then I'm drafted in.
I have to get the hair done.
Yeah. Sarah might have gone looking at a hotel somewhere, aside from Mike. And it's a new energy. It's a totally different energy. And, like, it's not like you ever forget about Shane, but it's getting away from it for a while. Like, just.
Exactly. And two more men to add to the two men in your life already as well, which is fantastic. Yeah. And I do know you dote over them. I know that very, very well. And Sarah, one of the striking images that I have is Harry around Shane from early on.
Yeah.
And it was something that we've seen on social media and seen on TV, obviously, as well, through Virgin Media and through RTE. And the love that they have for Shane, obviously, Ollie's newer in the picture, let's put it this way, but the love, I'd say, that Harry has for Shane is unbelievable.
Yeah, I remember when Harry was born and Mike wasn't driving at the time. So Dad actually came to pick us up from the hospital the morning they said we could go home, and got in the car anyways. And I was sitting in the back with Harry and Mike was in the front with Dad. And Dad was just chatting all about, like, you know, mind that baby now and, like, he's so precious and everything. And Dad said that he was going to go down the Curragh line because there was traffic or whatever. And he said, do you want to go to Shop Street now? Because it'll be warmer than the apartment and everything. And, you know, we were living in an apartment at the time. And, you know, Mam will make you something to eat or whatever. And I said, no, I want to go to the nursing home. I want Shane
go
to meet.
Straight. Yeah.
I want Shane to meet his nephew. And I still remember, like, bringing him in. And, like, Shane was, he was lying in the bed at the time and putting Harry, a day old, down, like, just down beside Shane. And Shane just turned and, like, it was like almost like he's kissed the top of his head. And is there a photo of it?
Oh, there is a picture. I'm looking at it up there.
Oh, yeah.
In the middle, right smack in the middle.
And,
oh, wow.
That was it then. We kind of, I was obviously on maternity leave at the time. So I kind of always take off up to him every day and in for a chat. And then I came off maternity leave and went back to work. So then Harry was going up with Mam up to Shane. And Harry had been in and out every day. And next thing is he was running in the door into the nursing home. And then, you know, he was just every day up, no more than up until COVID. But for 3-4 years, they were in and out to each other there. And Harry understood Shane and Shane understood Harry. And even though I suppose the communication wasn't there either, with Harry not having that level of communication nor Shane at the time, but they just always had a bond together. And even now, I think with Harry not being into Shane in the last, say, 22 months, I think it does affect him because he kind of would say, you know, I kind of, if I'm allowed in once a week into Shane, I have to say I'm going to work, because if I said I was going to Shane without him, there'd be tears.
All right, okay.
And he does. He still would say, you know, and how is Shane and why can't we go in? And, like, sure, we have to drive past his door every day to go home, to pass the nursing home.
Yeah.
And he'd just ask, you know, how is he? And he just kind of, they just always share a bond, I think. More than Ollie, obviously, because obviously Ollie's only 15 months. So he still has some visits that he needs to get in to see, to meet Shane properly. But yeah, I think that Harry understands, and he knows he's clever. He kind of knows he knows the bond between me and Shane. I think that Harry feels that bond, and he knows that Shane is special to us.
And I don't want to upset you, but Shane is obviously non-verbal at the moment, and the connection that she had, you miss that a lot.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult to adapt, I suppose, to stuff that you had planned all along, do you know?
The secrets that you might have had together, that kind of an idea. So you miss that.
Yeah, I think that we had always planned that, I suppose, our kids would grow up together, and my nieces and nephews, and I'd be able to rely on him as a babysitter, and he'd be able to rely on me, and, you know, we'd live close by to each other and, I suppose, raise our kids together. And at the moment, that's not the plan.
It's not. Let's move on, first of all, onto the care for Shane. Obviously, as it was set up at the time, the fund or the trust for Shane back. When did that happen, first of all, Joe, that the trust fund start up?
Was it 2013? Della's Tea Dance kind of kicked it off at the time, which was an amazing event. And they would always be forever grateful to her for, you know, organising it, and our good friend Margaret Monaghan with her. And I remember going down to it, like, an all-day tea dance. Like, you know, how could you raise that amount of money? But everyone that was asked put their hand in their pocket, and that started the Care for Shane Fund. And then we kind of developed it into, then we had the balloon race then for a few years. We used to launch the balloons, everyone were tagged, and like one finished up in Norway one time. And
really?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Really?
It was an amazing thing to see, and it was the releasing of the balloons, and they were all biodegradable, and they were all, you know, everything was done right. And we did that for, I think it was 3 years. And then we just decided, this mightn't be the right thing to do for the environment anymore. But we had the family fun day built up at that stage down the palace grounds. And it was fantastic. I mean, we were surprised, I suppose, that it really took off. And it became an event that people were looking forward to every year. Again, thank you, COVID. Last 2 years, gone. And we don't know about this year what the story is. We'll see as we're going along. It's just, you know, but and over the years, again, we've had a lot of different events, from kids having the lemonade stall down in the Meadows years ago, and to, you know, people just corporate sponsorship, or people giving money, and I donate there. There isn't a week that a fiver might come in from someone, just say we're thinking of Shane. Or there could be, like, you know, someone could come with a bigger amount. You know, again, we did a fundraising. Merge Medical have been extremely good to us over the years, always helped us out. And, you know, a lot of different organisations have backed it. And if it wasn't for it, we wouldn't have Shane's physiotherapy. We wouldn't have a lot of what we have. What's it cost? Like 50,000 a year to keep Shane? This is outside of, you know, like his nursing home fees are covered pretty much there. But, you know, for physios and all that, it costs money. And we are so lucky that we can do this compared to other families who haven't got that backing with them, you know. And like I said, it's so important to us. And hopefully to get back again this year, or just see where we're going with Shane. Like I said, we're snagging the other night about, you know, if we won the 19 million, like, what would you do? Well, what would you do? You know, you'd give it all if you could find someone that would walk into Shane and do something. You know, it's important. It's important to keep the fundraising going that, you know, that we have for Shane. There's two trustees involved in it. And like I said, all invoices go directly to them, and they write the checks. We don't see, basically don't see any of the money. It goes into an account, and that's the way we want it. With, you know, it has nothing to do really with us. The trust is there for him.
And just obviously to tell people, is the Care for Shane is the iDonate, if people get into iDonate, I presume, and key in Care for Shane.
The iDonate is the easiest way of getting into it. If you go on to iDonate.ie and Care for Shane, or go on to the Care for Shane Facebook page, there's a link there, and you can donate your fiver or your tenner or whatever you want. And it's like I say, it all helps. It's amazing over the years, all the different, like, I mean, so many different events over the years. Some of them were hilarious. We had a great night up in the Abbey Tavern there a few years ago. It was the stairs in their eyes. You know, I mean, I know, Shane, it is a tragedy, but we have had some good days. You know, we're not, it's not all that we're, you know, going around with our heads down. You know, there is a lot of fun, and a lot of fun is based around Shane and because of Shane, because again,
well, he was fun filled himself.
Exactly.
So I think it's important to emulate that in stuff that happens, recreational stuff that happens to raise money.
Yeah.
I think it's important.
Yeah, that has to be part of it.
It has to be a huge part of it as well. And, you know, he's had so many friends. Do his friends call as well down to see him down below? Well, obviously at the moment they can't with COVID and all that, but was there a flow in the odd time?
The special friends, like they've always been very genuine and loyal to him. Like, and some of them be away, and the first thing they'll do is pick up the phone when they're at home for a weekend. It's not for everybody. Looking at Shane the way he is, and like some of them are heartbroken for him, and they don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah,
and you can go in so long, and there's no response back, and it's just hard going for them.
It is. Yeah. But I have to say, and maybe I'm biased by saying this, but the people of Tuam and the surrounding areas have been absolutely fantastic throughout this. And I know lots of them, as you said, Joe, did come to you with ideas of ways to raise money and all that. But Tuam is a very, very special town. I will say that. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart, obviously, with connections with Tuam. But there's a great camaraderie and a great thing in Tuam that people just get together to help. And do you find that yourselves, well, no doubt?
Like I said, that day I came down from Beaumont, that's what it really hit me. This, why are these people? What is it? I suppose you don't understand it or don't realise it. Like someone said to me, well, should you do the same yourself? You know, if there was another, you know, someone came down selling tickets, you'll buy them. Or, you know, everyone helps. I mean, in a particular time of tragedy, people gather, you know, they do come around and, to go walk up the town or to be anywhere in the shop, and John might go up to get a pint of milk up in O'Toole's there or whatever. It could be an hour gone, like, where were you? Oh, I met such a one. And sure, and this is a regular thing.
Okay,
but like I say, it's therapy for us as well. It's, you know, you have to talk about it. It's just, you know, and I don't know if things didn't work out for Shane, where we'd be today. We probably wouldn't be sitting here, Ronan. It's an awful thing to say, but, you know, and I feel for people, because in my line of business, I have seen it over the years, tragic circumstances, and I feel for parents that and families that, you know, just genuinely can't, I don't know how they cope with the loss of a loved one like that. So we're so lucky in so many ways that Shane is there, and like I say, they go down talking to him and telling him stuff that, you know, well, thankfully, they won't go outside these four walls, like, but, you know, but that's all part of it, you know. It's very difficult when there's no response, obviously, because Shane was a great man for the chat. Sitting here now, he used to come in and stand there at the fireplace and debate with the politics, or do you hear your man on the radio today? And he's stand there pontificating. And I think he's God, where's he come with this? Like, he's all grown up all of a sudden, listening to the radio.
But I suppose he had a level head on his shoulders, as you told us about.
I don't know where that came from.
The golf to the mother side. The golf to the Audi and the whole that. And even going back to the accountancy. Now, I just want to say as well that you got behind a wonderful initiative at the time as well, Use Your Brain, Not Your Fist. That got a huge amount of interest at the time. I remember you were on TV speaking about it as well. And you really wanted to get that across, that when somebody does raise their hand, realise the ripple effect that it can actually have across a family and across the country, as it was. Tell me a little bit, who came up with that idea?
Well, the Dolans originally, they had lost their son, Andrew, the January that Shane was hurt. And Rosie and Joe Dolan in Carrick and Shannon, they owned the Bush Hotel. And it was really Rosie and Joe's brainchild, really, that they wanted to do something, because they said there was 12 Shanes that year hurt.
Wow.
And Andrew didn't survive. He was in a coma and he never woke up. And it was so unfortunate for them that they just wanted to do something and to go into the schools. It was the Corlan Oge and Longford and Leitrim that they got involved with first. And Rosie did all the work. She was just on the go all the time with it. And it was just to get them at that age when they're in school to realise the impact of it, to see what the effect it has on the first of all, that we'll say the person that is hurt, and even the perpetrator, and then the families, the broader picture, the ripple effect that it has. it's something just tragic, really. Like, and yeah, the Dolans, they were amazing, and they still are. They're very strong people, very strong.
Yeah, and did you feel, because I know, Joe, you go into schools, having a chat with students about that, and just kind of telling them to, you know, think twice when you do get maybe angry about something or whatever. How are you received in schools when you speak to the students?
Yeah, it's kind of like, I understand where teachers come from now. I've been in a lot of schools and a lot of big groups, and these are all like 14, 15, 16-year-olds, and like some of them are down the back messing. you're trying to put your story, your point across. But in general, they do appreciate what we're going through. They show the videos of Use Your Brain, Not Your Fist, and some of the clips from that we've done on TV for Shane. But like, these are the kids you want to get, because they're going to the nightclubs if they do open again, and they're going to be out there. Look, there's drink and drugs. That's there. So I always say, look, if you see your friend or someone getting into a bit of bother, pull them away. It only takes like 2 seconds. Just get them away out of the situation so that this thing doesn't happen to you or to someone else's family. You know, and it's, I'd say, in 9 times out of 10, you get a very good positive response from people, you know, and they'll ask questions, and they'll ask about Shane, and they'll ask about the court case and what went on and what we went through there. And it's, you know, I get a very positive response from them, and all you can do, you'll never know. It's like everything else.
Yeah.
You'll never know. You might have prevented something down the line, but you'll never know.
Yeah.
And we're hoping that people would listen to our message and say, you know, I know it's a difficult thing, but, you know, just mind one another. That's what we're there for on this planet. Just mind people and make sure that, you know, that you get home safe. Because I'm sure myself and John and when Sarah and Shane were out, the old creaky floorboard out here in the hall that we'd never fixed, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be sneaking in at God knows what hour of the morning, but they'd hit it. And they'd be like, but they would think it like they're awake. No, we would also think, now we can go to sleep.
Yes.
Now you can rest. Because until that happens, as a parent, you're always worried. And then Sarah went off to England and we didn't care about her at all.
Actually, that's what I want to get onto for a second. Do you feel through the tragic events that happened in 2012, did you get closer as a family?
Definitely.
Or were there times that you drifted apart from each other out of upset or anger?
I don't think that we ever drifted apart in any way, but we just feel like there's something missing, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were always close.
Yeah.
We bounced off one another, and it's like, especially when we're Shane, like, you never see the three of us in the room with Shane that much, as in, we'll go in our own time.
It's just
our own thing.
Yeah.
And it's like that, you know. Okay, there's days when you don't want to talk to anyone. Like, you want to be in a dark room and just forget about what's going on. But then the phone will ring and Sarah, look, how are you doing? Ali's looking for you. Like, there's always some, you know, and then like that, you snap out of it and here you go. Life goes on and you know. But like I said, the Harry and Ali are just, they meant the world to me as well. You know, that you know, it's just, even to see them playing football. You know, they grow up so quick. This is the problem. Like, you only have them for a while. And, you know, and all of a sudden, Harry is turning into Shane. It's in that way, you know, he's, what, 7 now, see?
He's seven this year.
So, like, you know, and he's grown up so fast. And he's going to be, you know, and it's getting very close to when Shane was that age. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's more clear in my head about Shane at that age. Mm. And that's it. Life does go on. And I'm really hoping to, when Harry gets back in to see him and Ali gets in to see Shane and we can get Shane out, which is just as important, because unfortunately we couldn't get him out for the last while either. And we want to get to normal. We always said we want to get Shane uptown or get Shane home. Now, unfortunately, this won't be home here for him because you can see where we live. But we're always to build a house, and we have the site bought and we had a lot done. And our next phase is that. And please God, it'll happen in shorter term, not, you know, that we will get things moving. And have Shane. No, he wouldn't be at home full time, maybe, but at least he'd be at home with us during the day. And like you said, he might hear Joan and myself having an odd row because he hasn't heard us having a row in 9 years.
Absolutely.
You'll get the text about it, Ronan.
I was just about to say, yeah, we'll do a podcast on that. You know, not that she had a row in 9 years.
No.
We'll get a divorce.
I doubt that very much.
Who are you texting? I'm just texting Ronan. What?
Smiley face.
Is grand. Well, I don't mind seeing those smiley faces at all. Well, I think you're a fabulous family. And I think an awful lot of people that I know say the same, and that you're a very strong family. Obviously, as you said, you're close to yourselves with everything that's going on, and you do your time in with Shane, and you have your chats and all that. And I just want to wish you continued success with the raising funds and all that kind of an idea. And anything we can do along the line to help, we will definitely do that in every way, shape or form. The house situation, you said you have the site all going well. Yeah. See how that goes.
Yeah, it's all ready to go. I already know as a builder. How do you think, Ronan?
I was never great at putting two blocks together. But anyway, look at putting two words together at times can be hard enough for me. But anyway, I just want to say a huge thank you to you. And thanks, Millie, for approaching me. And we had a chat on the phone beforehand. And I do wish you the best. I wish Shane the best. Mm-hmm. And I wish you all. And of course, Sarah, to get back to where we started, I do wish you the best in your marriage with Mike and the two lads, and you wouldn't know, there might be more additions along the line. We'll see how that goes along the line too. But thank you very much indeed for being so honest, for being so open. And to anybody out there that was listening in, hopefully anybody that might have situations with anger, somebody that might just be a little bit iffy with drinking them or whatever the case may be very, very careful. Use your brain, not your fist. Think about that in the future. And thanks so many for having the chat, lads.
Lovely. Thanks so much, Ronan.
If there's anyone out there that needs support with people with injuries, if we can help in any way, we're here. We've been through it so much that we know how to get to the different mazes of departments and people. And that's what, we're all here to help each other.
And I suppose the most important thing to do is to talk.
Talk, yeah. It's good to talk.
It is good to talk. Thanks a million.
Thanks a million.
If you would like to make a financial donation, visit idonate.ie/careforshane.